Number 7B.
Now, that was the tone of life. And now we go further to the next main tone of truth. And here we have a longer exposition, but fundamentally a very easy one and very natural one. Our epitome reads that the divine justice of truth condemns animal magnetism. Now, with truth, very often in the textbook you have that idea of the judge and being judged and the court case and things like that. They all appear under truth because truth is that which judges error. So the divine justice of truth says, I condemn animal magnetism. Now, over those two pages really flows practically a sense of that justice. How does she elaborate on it? She says, first, as a subtone of mind, Christian science goes to the bottom of mental action. So she takes up animagnetism as mental action, as we know it, but I say I go to the bottom of it, and reveals the theodicy which indicates the rightness of all divine action as the emanation of divine mind, and as the consequent wrongness of the opposite so-called action, evil, occultism, necromancy, mesmerism, animal magnetism, hypnotism. You see, she puts all those into one category of animal magnetism. We can call it animal magnetism, we can call it occultism, we can call it hypnotism, we can call it necromancy, we can call it just evil. It's all the same thing, namely, it is a false activity. Whereas the truth, as mind says, that is the only, that truth is only mind, divine mind, that the truth of being acts only through the righteousness of divine action. You have righteousness, truth of divine action, mind, as the emanation of divine mind. So this is the theodicy of Christian science. Now, theodicy is a term that, as far as I know, was coined by Leibniz and defined it by saying that the world as it is really the best kind of world, namely that evil is necessary for the existence of the highest moral good. So in his theodicy, he accepted both factor, evil and good, and said, the way it is, that's the best balance, really, that evil must be so as to stir up in the human a sense for good, so as to act against evil, and that's the best way how a theodicy operates. That's the best kind of world. Now, here she comes up and says, more or less, well, this is animal magnetism, what Leibniz was saying as a theodicy. I have only one nature, namely the nature of mind, that is always good. So she stipulates another theodicy and says it is the rightness of all divine action. So again she goes out and says that truth which operates through the divine mind as an emanation of divine mind, that is the only truth, whereas the very opposite, namely that any action that comes not from the divine mind, namely from animal magnetism, must be wrong. So the judgment is made that animal magnetism now at that point is called wrong, the wrongness of the opposite so-called action. In the second subject we had that animal magnetism was not real. Now in truth it must be shown that it is wrong and not true. She goes to the further subtone, the medicine of science is divine mind. Picks it up again at the point of mind, but then goes further. The medicine of science is divine mind. And dishonesty, sensuality, falsehood, revenge, malice, these are all animal propensities. and are by no means the mental qualities which heal the sick. So she now defines really what is good, what is evil. The side note is adulteration of truth. There you have truth, adulterated truth and spirit, because spirit is the purity, spirit is that which cannot be adulterated. And so we see that she brings out what are now the good qualities, what are the evil qualities which should heal. The hypnotizer employs one error to destroy another error. So it says the hypnotizer through his tricks shows wonderful phenomena. What are they? It's just one error destroying another error. It's the weaker mentality being controlled by a stronger mentality of the hypnotizer. The hypnotizer has a much stronger mentality, and therefore he can only hypnotize those who have not a strong mentality, who have a weak mentality. A hypnotizer cannot hypnotize a divine scientist. That's not possible. He can only hypnotize those who are not well-rooted in the divine mind. So if he heals sickness through a belief, and the belief originally caused the sickness, it is a case of the greater error overcoming the lesser error. Can you see? It's just a question of how much error there is in that mentality. So this greater error hereafter occupies the ground, leaving the case worse. Can see worse at the tone of spirit than before it was grasped by the stronger error. So here we have a very clear explanation how truth works. At first it shows truth as mind, that it works as an emanation of divine mind, and that therefore everything that does not emanate from the divine mind is therefore not truth, it's therefore wrong. Then the truth as spirit, it says, if you use the greater error or the stronger error to control the lesser error, then the case is just left worse instead of better. So it shows how animal magnetism makes things worse and not better. Naturally, animal magnetism claims that it can do something good and make a situation better. But she says that's only seemingly so. Fundamentally, it cannot be so, because if a greater error is at work, then it must also be a greater evil that is the result. Then she goes to the next one, to soul. Again, she speaks about the courts. Our courts recognize evidence to prove the motive as well as the commission of a crime. As it comes to crime and criminal, that is always the opposite of soul, of maliciousness. So it says what we should judge is not so much the crime itself, but the motive that is behind the crime. Is it not clear that the human mind must move the body to a wicked act? If I stab a man, then what stabs a man? Is it the knife that stabs a man? Or is it my will, my desire, my willpower? Is it the human mind that makes up his mind and say, I'm going to stab the man? So actually, the human mind should be judged. That's the point that she brings out. Is not mortal mind therefore the murderer? It's not the bullet that kills a man, it's not the knife that kills a man, it's really mortal mind, it's the motive. The hands without mortal mind to direct them could not commit a murder. So the courts therefore should be sitting in judgment over what? Over mortal mind, and not over the criminal case, over the crime itself, but over the criminal mind, the malicious mind. That's truth as soul. Then she goes on with that court symbol and comes to principle and shows here something else, namely, it's an interesting paragraph here, that courts and juries judge and sentence mortals in order to restrain crime, to prevent deeds of violence, or to punish them. To say that these tribunals have no jurisdiction over the carnal or mortal mind would be to contradict precedent and to admit that the power of human law is restricted to matter, while mortal mind, evil, which is the real outlaw, defies justice and is recommended to mercy. What he is saying, that already now, really, the courts and juries will judge according to motive and not according to act, the outward act, not according to the material phenomena of that act, but according, really, to the motives, tracing it back to mortal mind. Can matter commit a crime? Can matter be punished? Can you separate the mentality from the body over which courts hold jurisdiction? So courts naturally hold jurisdiction over a person, over a body. But actually what they hold jurisdiction over is the motive that was behind the act. So they actually already see that it should be mortal mind that should be judged. Then 13, mortal mind, not matter, is the criminal in every case. So she repeats that again, what she has said, that mortal mind is the murder. Now she says again, mortal mind is the criminal, but now in every case. You come to the classification of things, that's always a tone of principle, that you classify things and says, here, principle doesn't classify according to outward phenomena. It's always one thing at stake that has to be judged. It's always mortal mind. And human law rightly estimates crime, and courts reasonably pass sentence according to the motive. So she says, really, the courts are doing a good job, and in this case, they are really going right down to animal magnetism and really judge animal magnetism and not so much the body or not so much the person. Then she says, when our laws eventually take cognizance of mental crime, that's naturally difficult to take cognizance of mental crime, because how can you judge mentality if it's done in secret? How can you find out what's going on in the mind of people? How can you deal with a malpractitioner when you can't prove anything what's going on in his mind? That's the difficulty. And actually she can see that eventually the laws must really do that they should be able to detect the real criminal thought. But we know that is not only possible through divine mind reading. And it takes another few decades until the courts will be able to read mortal mind through the immortal mind. So, she says, eventually we'll take cognizance of mental crime and no longer apply legal rulings wholly to physical offenses. But that's difficult, you see, to trace back a criminal act to mentality. How can you do that if you have a real good mental malpractitioner? He can sit in secret and can handle people and can handle situations without that anybody can take notice of it. Who can tell what somebody sitting there in a chair and just thinking what he's thinking? If he's thinking evil or if he's thinking good? That's difficult. Therefore, we need really divine metaphysics. We need really divine mind reading. That alone can do it. So when that eventually will happen, the words of Judge Parmenter of Boston will become historic. I see no reason why metaphysics is not as important to medicine as to mechanics or mathematics. I really never could understand the reasoning here. Why suddenly she would talk about medicine and mechanics or mathematics only in one case, namely regarding medicine, because the practitioner, the malpractitioner, acts as a healer, or the opposite, and therefore has to do with medicine. So she had, I guess, to quote the whole sentence, and not just to make after medicine dot, dot, dots, dots, and then at the end of the quotation mark. But actually what she says here, in our terms, we would say, so finally that will happen, that it needs divine metaphysics or divine mind reading in order to be able really to see through those mental malpractitioners, and therefore through the healing work or not healing work of the practitioners. Yes, so that's now the signs of mind reading. And now we come to another subtone of life. Whoever uses his developed mental powers like an escaped felon to commit fresh atrocities. Can you see now you have a subtone of life that the malpractitioner can always, instead of bringing the newness of life, always new atrocities, that's the counterfeit of the newness of life, multiply, so to say, constantly his acts. As opportunity occurs, is never safe. God will arrest him. She said, well, don't think that the malpractitioner, though he acts in the secret, will ever be undetected. You can see that there will come a time when one can see, but when it will be shown that the malpractitioner is doing the evil work, because God will arrest him. Because he goes against the constructive sense of life, because he goes against the newness of life, because he goes against the impulsion of life, because he goes against the multiplication of life, he cannot go against God indefinitely. Sometimes, somehow, he breaks down. He knocks his head against life, God, and he breaks down. This is what we can see when we are in such a position where we don't perhaps see right through what's going on in the secret, that we at least can know that that cannot go on indefinitely. That the more we entertain with our consciousness that God is being, that God is life, and that life is constructive, that life is exalting, then we can see that anything that goes against that life really breaks down. Divine justice will manacle him. His sins will be millstones about his neck, weighing him down to the depth of ignominy and death. Can you see the tone of life? It drags him down. It comes to an end. So that whole animal magnetic motive will fall to dust. The aggravation of error foretells its doom. Again, life, its doom. Sometimes we see error gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and we think, golly, 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 we can't do anything against it. Error is getting stronger and stronger and stronger. Error is getting more and more power. But there is a law behind it, namely that we knock our head, such a malpractitioner knocks his head against life, and there will be the day of truth where really the error falls into its own nothingness. It falls to doom, and so confirms the ancient axiom, whom the gods would destroy, they first make mad. That's an old axiom which shows actually that working of truth of life, that truth uncovers error more and more. The more truth uncovers error, the more error is seen. The more error will scream loud, and the more we think in our ignorance that error is growing, whereas the very opposite is happening, because that truth is also life. It is just a method of how error destroys itself, the self-destruction of error. Error can only destroy itself by growing bigger and bigger until it collapses. It's like a little balloon that you blow up and blow up, and it seems it gets bigger and bigger. But it doesn't get big until it's as big as the whole universe. There comes a point of no return in that blowing, and then it pops like that. In 1 second, bang, and everything is over. And that's how error also pops at a certain moment. We come to a subtone of truth. The distance from ordinary medical practice to Christian Science, so she compares medical practice and Christian Science, and that difference is fully many a league in the line of light. They are not similar. That's an interesting statement because people think, well, whatever heals is true. Whatever heals is true. If the doctor heals through an operation, that's fine. If the doctor heals through a drug, that's fine. If the mesmerist heals through mesmeric hypnotism, that's fine, he heals it. If homeopathy heals through the attenuation of a drug and heals, that's fine. Everything is just fine as it heals. That's true. And Mrs. Eddy comes and said, don't talk nonsense. There is a great difference between healing. You can heal and heal, and healing is not healing. Healing and healing can be two very different things. Healing is not healing. You have to see the difference of healing by asking what is the cause of that change of symptoms. And that change of symptoms may be a greater error overcoming a lesser error and making the case worse in the long run. But to go in healing from the use of inanimate drugs, that's what medicine does, to the criminal misuse of human willpower, which is animal magnetism, is really to drop from the platform of common manhood into the very mire of iniquity, to work against the free course of honesty and justice, and to push vainly against the current running heavenward. So what she says here is very simple. She just wants to show there is a difference between healing through medicine and healing through Christian Science. There is a difference. But that difference is even much bigger if you compare the healing on the basis of Christian Science of truth and the healing through animal magnetism. That distance is even bigger. That's what she wants to say. And it becomes so big that it really is something which she calls here to fall from the platform of common manhood. It goes against the dignity of manhood. It goes against the dignity that somebody, through his willpower, through his evil qualities, can influence me and heal me. I don't like that. That destroys the dignity of man. I don't mind if a drug, an inanimate drug, can help me. That I wouldn't mind very much. But to go through the misuse and criminal misuse of human willpower, that I would mind. That somebody is trespassing uninvited into my consciousness and does something in my consciousness, that I would mind. Then I'm no more man. Then I'm the slave of somebody else. Then I'm just a putty in the hands of a criminal. That goes against the platform of common manhood. So, a last subtone of love, where she says, like our nation, Christian Science has its declaration of independence, what shows that man is independent, that he has his own rights. God has endowed man with inalienable rights, among which are self-government, reason, and conscience. You see, that's the platform of manhood of which she was speaking. Man is properly self-governed only when he is guided rightly, when he is not misguided by a mental practitioner, and governed by his maker, God, divine truth and love. Here you get now to the end of it, suddenly comes in for the first time truth and love. That's the attitude from which the whole chapter is written, from truth and love. And so then she goes on about men's rights. Men's rights are invaded when the divine order is interfered with, namely then when the mental trespasser incurs the divine penalty due to his crime. So she shows here what is the divine order. Suddenly she brings in the divine order. In which way? What is that divine order? She says, when what she has been saying, namely that man's maker is divine truth and love. And if we don't draw our life from divine truth and love, then that is sidestepping the divine order. We are out of order. The order is that everything comes from God to man. And that is the divine order. That's not just order. That's divine order because it's a Christ order. The Christ has only one order from God to man. The Christ has no other order. The world order is from man to God. But the Christ order is divine. The Christ is always divine. And that order is that we always have to see that everything flows from God to man and does not flow from man to man. Or else man's right, man's dignity is invaded. So we can only keep our dignity when we see that we are only governed and only guided and only influenced by truth and love. Any other influence and any other guidance goes against our dignity, our common manhood. And so she finishes that big tone of truth, that the divine justice of truth condemns animal magnetism. Yes. We'll go over this again in a short way tomorrow and then take the last subject, love, and then afterwards we will take the laws of animal magnetism, and that takes some time. Tomorrow evening, a class, or else I can't show you the main subject that is in my heart, namely the third part.